So basically, this is actually Arthur's and my panel, but we invited our friend Kirk because he's a madman and he's one of the most entertaining people we know.
Well, don't oversell him. Don't oversell him.
If you guys want to ask Kirk questions, he's actually amazing. You may know him as the punk on the bus in Star Trek IV. He's in the current Spider-Man movie as the bum on the street. He's also...
Punk on the street.
Punk on the street.
You don't say bum or in England, I think.
Can you be a punk at your age?
Why not? Man. That's a dick question.
But he's also been involved in Muppets for ages, and he's done many, many movies. Many, many, many movies.
This is my new publicist.
No, he's really cool, so if you want to ask him questions, go for it. Because you never know what he'll say.
Oh, and I'm here, too.
Well, yes.
But before we start, the good people from Comic-Con International would like to do a little presentation.
No way.
This is your life.
Woo!
Good afternoon. Pleased to be here. I'm Adam Neese, the assistant to the director of programming for Comic-Con International. We're here today to celebrate the careers of comic writer and author Art Adams and comic artist Joyce Chin. The team have achieved success as comic creators both together and independently. Art Adams has worked on titles ranging from Uncanny X-Men and Fantastic Four to Vampirella, Godzilla, Longshot, Guppy, and his own Monkey Men and O'Brien, while Joyce has worked on such titles as X-Men 92, Spider-Man, All-New Wolverine, and Thor. Both are accomplished cover artists who've helped to shape the way we view some of the most popular characters in comics today. It's my honor to be here today on behalf of Comic-Con International, its board of directors, to present our Inkpot Awards for Achievement in Comic Arts to both Arthur Adams and Joyce Chin.
Woo! Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Shut up.
Thank you. I had no idea. Thank you. We could kill people with you.
Yeah.
And I think there's a license here that says we can do that.
Guys, right over here, please. For the short guy.
For the short guy.
Thank you.
Wow. Lick your lips. Wow. Till your head's in the wind.
Ooh. It's amazing.
How about that?
Cool.
Thank you.
All the excitement in Vegas right here in San Diego.
Woo!
Okay, that's it. Basically,
all right. Well, thank you for being here.
Got our things. Gotta go.
So, we're out.
Yeah, we're just kind of keep it casual, and we don't know. If you guys have a ton of questions, we can just answer questions, or they can answer questions, or I can talk to them for all day long. They've become really good friends over the last...
Well, come on.
2 days? Well, I haven't been in a hot tub with them yet.
We were all in jail together in Mexico.
That was a party. They know how to con down in Mexico.
Only half a joke.
So if there are a bunch of questions, just raise hands, and then we can do that. Or if there's not, then we're just going to talk. Okay,
and
I see no hands. So no
questions. Literally any question will do.
What are you wearing? Who are you wearing? It's like the Oscars. Well, so I have questions because I was fans of Arthur's art since the 80s. I worked in San Francisco at Lucasfilm, and your stuff was coming out. And I had a friend, Tony McVeigh, a sculptor, became a friend of you, and Phil Tippett knew. Because he does amazing
Phil Tippett
models.
Knew who my stuff was?
Yeah.
Who got my stuff?
You drew amazing
that's hard
monsters.
To oh, my goodness.
No, we all
man, I should have gotten a different career.
It's like you got two awards today.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The crabby old man award from Phil Tippett.
Yeah, because I've seen him around, and I've like wanted to go say hi, but he looks crabbier than I do.
He's super crabby. Let's just tell him I sent you, and he'll punch you. So my question is, first, did you guys meet at a convention because of your careers?
We met at my second year in comics at the very, very last day of San Diego Comic-Con, at the very, very last party of San Diego Comic-Con. And it was the early 90s, so literally I was like the only woman in the room.
Yeah. Wow. So this is like an anniversary for you guys.
Kind of. Yeah. It's sort of an awkward nerd anniversary. We did not get married at the convention.
No.
That's not that weird.
No, actually, the convention is the only time I don't dress in Star Trek costumes.
That's true. I've been to their house.
Yeah.
He beams you in from the front porch. It's weird, but because of my Trek history, I played along.
Yeah.
None of what we're telling you, by the way, is true. This is all baloney.
It's all bullshit.
We're just trying to entertain ourselves because you guys don't really care. You have no questions. Oh, there's a question. Don't ask what their favorite character is.
Kirk Thatcher.
Your description says that you've done toy packaging. I don't recall seeing anything that you've done offhand. So
well, I'll tell you about it.
Tell us, Arthur.
I did a design for a Godzilla toy package that was never used, but I was still paid for it. It still counts. I did some toy designs for some Hulk toys ages ago, and they used some of my artwork on the back of the package to say, oh, look, someone drew this first. I don't know why it was back there, but it was. It was.
Probably legal reasons.
So it has happened just this much. Of
well,
the
Hulk.
Toys, where was a Hulk?
Godzilla.
There was the Absorbing Man, Mecha Hulk. And there was one more in that package. Who was that? I'm blanking on the other one at the moment. It might have been another Hulk, but I'm not absolutely sure. Oh no, it was the leader.
Yeah.
But they insisted they wanted me to draw the Todd McFarlane leader. Who's got a big, curly brain head. And I prefer the old Jack Kirby, the leader, who's got a very big, tall dome. Not really a dome, more of a time capsule head.
Yeah.
You know, contact time capsule.
Yeah, like a bullet, kind of a bullet.
Well, I was thinking more like cold medicine.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Not the pills I was thinking of.
No, it's all right.
We're just going to start pointing to people and demanding questions.
Oh, one in the back. Or waving.
The toy version was based mostly around the early 90s Godzilla. It wasn't dead on, but it was of that style. They wanted me to do ridiculous things to his anatomy. Just to make him, bend his back and tail in an odd way, but it was mostly based on that. Most of the Godzillas I've drawn have been based on various movie Godzillas, either the 92 Godzilla, and I did some covers for a book that featured the 84 Godzilla. And then there was a recent one where I kind of did slightly my own version. But for the most part, I try not to make up anything for myself.
Do you have a favorite
Godzilla? Lazy and tired. Do I have a favorite Godzilla? The favorite look of the Godzilla. So favorite would be 1954, original style.
Right,
closely followed by 1962, King Kong versus Godzilla. You're sorry you asked this question now, aren't you?
I knew you were
followed up with 1989 Godzilla. Not 92, 1991, but 1989.
Yes.
Same suit, but they gave him different eyes. In 1989, he had brown eyes. In 91, they gave him yellow eyes. It just looked silly. It didn't look like an animal at all. Then 2002 was really an excellent suit. Some people don't like it. He has really big feet, but I like it quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense biologically. You had a question, or you're just waving at us?
No, I was wondering if you could talk about the collaboration between the writing and the editing.
Sure.
Well, when I write for myself,
it's been a while,
but mostly I think about what a crappy artist I have working with me. Try to come up with something relatively easy, give it to the writer, and the writer looks at the script and says, this is nonsense. I'll never be able to make any sense. The actual process is, for myself, because I have a pretty good idea of what I'm doing when I'm doing it, which is not very often, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, you're way off the rails.
But I'll just take a piece of paper. I have however many pages I need to fill, and I'll just write one sentence, page one, something happens, and so forth and so on. Then I draw that. Then I put in word balloons, and they print it. It's the weirdest thing.
And there's beer.
Occasionally there's beer. Not a great deal of beer. I don't like beer that much.
No, there was always beer in a sandwich, right?
I don't want to talk about it that much.
Getting too personal. Well, that brings up a question I had. So you guys are artists. You live together. You're married. You have a child together.
We do?
Yeah. Remember. Oh, that's where we left her. Shit. Go to McCormick and Schmidt. How does that work? I mean, you know,
it's a total failure.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
No, but you've drawn separate rooms?
We totally draw in separate rooms. I can't stand to draw the way he does, and he can't stand to draw the way I do.
She sits on the couch, surrounded by dogs.
I sit on the couch with all our dogs hanging around and with, like, things going on, and he's isolated in a room surrounded in so many toys and books, and like you can't. It's like LucasArts called us once because he had done an illustration for George Lucas, and they wanted to come film his studio. And like you can't even get in to his studio to film it. So we just went to LucasArts, which isn't far away from where we live.
And it's much nicer.
And filmed there. Yeah, it's much nicer. They set up like a
fake. I have to go back and get my toys.
They put him in sort of their. They have an artist training area. yeah. sculpting room. Yeah, so nice. So he was in there, and it was all pretty and back.
I spun some bowls.
Get personal. I don't care how you got the job. So what about working styles? You're raising a kid. You have two separate art rooms, art studios.
Well, I work in the living room. I always have.
Okay, so that is your studio, is the living room.
More or less, like, I had a studio for a while, but I was never in it because I feel like it cuts you off from the rest of the house.
We lived together for 10 years in a house in San Francisco. We had a tiny house, 1,000 square feet. We had one room we never used.
Yeah, because I was never in there. Okay, so in San Francisco, it's 1,000 square feet. We moved out of it 10 years ago. That house that we moved out of recently sold again.
That's not important to the story.
For $1.8 million for 1,000 square feet.
We're not that smart. We shouldn't have moved.
Don't move there. Unless
yeah, don't move to San Francisco.
So wait, what about
we didn't get $1.8 million.
No, because we moved 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You only got a million.
Nah.
What's your schedule? Like, division of duties at the home. Like, I'm drawing.
Oh, you mean
in a way,
like,
in a way.
Well, I don't know. It's random because I tend to work overnights.
So it's great. Like,
yeah.
You get up early and work. Because
we have a young daughter.
Kids.
She's six, so she gets up. She has to go to school.
Right.
I'm generally the food preparer in the house. Joyce is the driver. She can cook, but
who
she doesn't buy too.
We both do the bills.
Yeah, we both do the bills.
No, I mean, it's not that segmented.
No, it's just some people are.
Well, the problem
is... No, we just signed
Jeff. I'm learning more about them. I've been friends with them for years. I don't like stuff. I would never ask them because I don't really care.
The problem is...
No, we say, what are you doing now? We go inside our heads. Why do you do it like that?
Yeah. And the problem is two artists married each other. Usually people marry somebody sane and stable to balance out the crazy, and unfortunately...
So you're a sitcom.
So
yeah. Really a sitcom.
No, it's bad.
So what we're saying is we're open to that.
Right. No, yeah. I understand the need to have a sister wife, you know, just something... Somebody that can actually...
He volunteers. She'll teach you art by sitting on the couch. I'm
surrounded by dogs.
Surrounded by dogs. Yeah, yeah.
Surrounded by dogs.
Yeah.
And a kid.
Who's moderating?
Yeah, exactly. No, we all stopped and a kid.
Well, there's a question way over there. Yes, sir.
Was there any project or life experience that really pushed you to grow as an artist?
To either of us?
I was beaten a lot as a child.
I think a lot of artists and writers are isolated children in a weird way. So, I mean, that's kind of like a downbeat thing, but like... You don't meet a lot of kids that are out all the time and doing sports and have tons of friends and out all the time that wind up being doing this for a living.
Happy people don't do
that. Yeah, happy. It's not even necessary.
Comedy, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the kids who had sort of a reason to, either a natural inclination to, or a reason to be alone a lot concentrating on one thing. So for me, at least, it was reading comic books and books and... I drawing a lot. I actually stopped drawing, like, from about high school until about, I was, like, probably 20. So 18, 19, 20. Yeah, so I stopped drawing for about 3 years, and then I decided I didn't want a real job. And,
Now, why comics? Because a lot of women are artists, but not a lot of women comic book artists, and that's why you're a bit of a unicorn.
Especially for the time, because when I entered comics, it was 95, and I think it was me and Jill and Amanda, and that was it. And there was about one female editor per company. And, so the entirety of San Diego Comic-Con, there was never anybody in any women's restroom. The men's was hell on earth, like normal, and then the women's, it was just a ghost town. You'd be the only person to ever use it.
We were very popular.
Yeah, I know. I was really, I was like, you know who Thor is? And you want to draw it? But it was a weird thing of my mother had actually fled communist China and gone to Hong Kong, and she'd left Hong Kong when she was about 17 with about $200 in her pocket, not speaking English, took a ship to England, and she taught herself English by reading comic books and watching Speed Racer. And so when I was born, one of my very first memories is her reading me a comic book. So I never didn't have comic books in my life, and I loved superhero stories, and I, you know, all that stuff was really cool and interesting to me, and I didn't really know anybody who... read comics other than me, so as a consequence, when I got into comics, I didn't realize anybody thought anybody was interesting or famous. So And then the characters were interesting. So I kind of met a series of people who were all very well known in comics that I didn't care about.
And you married one of
them. Yeah.
Now.
And Arthur?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Well, I saw King Kong when I was about 5. And I wanted to be Willis O'Brien. Mm-hmm. But I found out he was dead.
You could be dead.
So I shouldn't do that.
That's easy.
Then I thought, oh, I want to be Ray Harryhausen, but we already had one of those. He wasn't dead. And I found Frank Frazetta, and I wanted to be Frank Frazetta. And he had that job already. So I just liked monsters and drawing. And
did you grow up in the Bay Area, or where did you grow up?
I grew up on Travis Air Force Base in California, which is about 50 miles from San Francisco.
So you were close enough.
Close.
To, because I was
near civilization.
But not civilization, but the West Coast. Because I find a lot of people who are in any art-related industry, if they grow up in the Midwest, a place where you can't make a living, you know, that's, you know, some weirdo does it. But
well,
at least, you know, it's
very awesome. I was born on the East Coast, but my father was in the Air Force and moved our family when I was 5 to Travis Air Force Base in somewhere in California. And so, yeah, when I said I want to draw comics, my mom and dad were like, well, we're supportive. They had no idea how to help, so they were very worried. They were like, well, he just keeps doing it. It's like, Arthur, we would like you to try to have, we're sure you're going to draw comics, but please get a backup plan.
Right.
Please figure out something else to do, because we want you to do comics, but we don't know how you can do that. Yeah. Then I joined Drama Club. And I said, hey, well, there was that.
Yeah.
But then I told my mother and father, okay, I found my backup plan. If I can't be a comic book artist, I'm going to be an actor comedian.
No, that's not what we did.
Oh, you did the same thing?
My mom was like, why don't you be the funniest lawyer? You could be a really funny doctor. People say doctors aren't fun. You could be a really funny doctor.
But oddly, it worked out for you. You did wind up creating a bunch of monsters.
Your past
well, that's, yeah. My favorite,
and you wind up acting often.
My favorite ironic parent story was my dad at about the age of 13 or 14 after Star Wars came out and I was making creatures in the backyard or the kitchen. He was a lawyer, very, very practical. He went to like 3 universities.
Oh my God,
like
your dad was a lawyer?
Yeah, my mom was a school teacher. Lovely.
They must have freaked out.
Yeah. No, he said, almost angrily, you will never make a living making monsters. 4 years later, I was making a living making monsters on Return of the Jedi. So, being a very upstanding, you know, man, he apologized. I was like, I told you, because he remembered as much as I did, I told you won't make a living making monsters, and I apologize. I was wrong.
No, I never got that.
I felt bad for him. I'm like, I know you cared about me.
I never got that from my parents. They couldn't. My parents are very Chinese, so this was not a job that they understood or cared about or wanted for their daughter. They wanted doctor, lawyer, engineer. You know, the standard Asian jobs, right? And, you know, own a restaurant.
Jewish, Asian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all the same. They want the same thing. So when I knew I had been accepted by my mother as doing this when I was working on Guy Gardner Warrior and a couple of Green Lantern things for DC, and she's like, I guess it's okay to draw the pornography. Can I take some book back to China so I show my daughter draw the pornography? It's okay. So that's when I knew I'd made it.
Wow. All right. How many? Oh, we have a question. Yes, ma'am.
No, I actually don't. I just sieve.
When you get a commission or a job for a character you're not as familiar with, how does that change your process?
Book learning.
With
get out the book
Google,
learning.
Google, it's amazing.
Yeah. Google's super good.
Yeah. I know, it's a long time.
Yeah.
No, we've actually had our booth in San Diego for, I don't know, close to 20, I think, is more than. It's a long time. So before Google, before everybody had phones,
before the Google.
We just used to ask Bruce, Tim, or Arthur because they're giant nerds, right? And they read everything. So it'd be like, oh, somebody wants you to do the 1940s version of Supergirl. Which one is that? Bruce would do a little drawing for people. So this is like all the way around this ring. And we would generally, that booth was filled with some of the more well-known artists, and so they were kind of the go-to. Other than that, I mean, you just find because at a comic book convention, there's always somebody that is more intensively nerdy. So you just identify who that is, and you rate them.
And Arthur?
No, you generally would know. I mean, but, like, people surprise you.
She's insulting you, man. And she says, you're not king of the nerds.
That was an insult?
Yeah, I know. No, I'll translate for you.
And they were divorced.
So yeah, other than that, they had archives and whatnot. One of my first jobs in comics, Phil Jimenez wrote, and Phil Jimenez writes like he draws. So there was like every single Green Lantern who had ever existed was in the story, like literally. And I had been a Marvel girl. So I had, in fact, never read any Green Lantern. I didn't know who anybody was. But at that time, this was before computers, so they sent two giant FedEx boxes that were single sheet. Each character had a single sheet. Two of them were entirely filled with every single Green Lantern from DC.
Wow.
So that was the way things used to be communicated.
She still hates Green Lantern to this day.
I don't know anything about Green Lantern. I drew like two issues and a bunch of other ancillary, like Guy Gardner is sort of an offshoot character.
Right.
And I still,
we like what
wow.
she did. She yeah. just doesn't care.
No, like, he's just not like I like drawing some DC books, and other ones were like, wow, this is a fun job, but I don't have an emotional
attachment. That was what I was going to ask. How, for both of you, how much of the time is it like, oh, I love this story, or I love these characters, or like, it's a job, I will draw it because I have that skill, but is it 50-50? I mean, obviously, when you're doing your own thing, it's different, but...
Not really.
I mean, it's still
ultimately for me anyway. It's just lines on paper,
right?
And I understand how fortunate I am that that's the case. But there's days I don't want to do it. But that's what the difference between a professional and someone who's not professional,
sure.
right? So I may not work as many hours that day, but I still do it because also we have a mortgage. Mortgage is a powerful inspiration to getting pages done. Yeah, yeah.
For me, it depends on who I'm working with and what the story is. Like, it was really hard. We did an issue where a bunch of artists got together and did the art for an issue. Jeff Loeb's son, Sam Loeb, died. Before he died, he had written a script. And so we all drew parts of that script. And it was all people who loved Sam. I was so upset while drawing that script. I did not a great job on that section of the book. So that was this thing. And I've always kind of like responded to scripts that way, whether it was working with Gail Simone on the Vampirella Magdalena Witchblade kind of crossover thing was so much fun. She writes such fun scripts. But I've drawn other scripts where like, I'm not sure this guy's actually ever met any women, ever.
I know you.
That was my script.
Yeah. So
there's a question.
I'm so sorry. You didn't hold it up higher than your head. So
actually, all three of you, who are your biggest artistic influences for all three?
Ladies first.
Oh, God, I don't even know. I mean, like, when I was reading comics, because I had no input from anybody else reading comics, I did not realize that you were supposed to follow your favorite artists and writers around. I followed the characters around. So I read Spider-Man, I read Daredevil, and I read X-Men, and, you know, a lot of the other books that are surrounding New Mutants and all that stuff. And I read those books. So whenever anybody came on to those books that I liked, it was like a bonus. It wasn't like I followed them around. So I came at it from a different... Like, I loved John Romita Jr. and him and John Byrne and Jim Lee when he came along and Silvestri and like, just the people who were working on those books that were like Frank Miller. I loved Bill Sienkiewicz's Stray Toasters, nice. That kind of stuff. But I came at it from such a different angle that it's hard to say. I think when I first started, my art was very of the era, very 90s influence, so everybody had to take a shit. Like, really bad. Like, women, the guys were always really super angry, no matter what, and the women were like, you know, everything was really way over tense and crazy, but that was the
she's
thing
crazy.
At the time. Yeah, she's totally nuts. So, you actually made more sense.
I don't want to follow that.
No.
I have lots of influences. Probably the major ones at the beginning of my career were Walter Simonson and Michael Golden and Barry Smith. But there's tons of other influences. Kirby, Wrights, and
I like Turner Frazetta, Lasson, commercial, like
Godzilla, King Kong.
Stuff like that. Yeah, Lion Decker.
Lots of things.
Yeah, for me, I was trained as an oil painter as a kid. I wanted to take art classes. My dad's secretary did Sunday oil painting. So I would go to these classes, and it would be like three or four other housewives painting like vases and flowers, and I was painting like skull faces. And I'd bring in famous monsters and say, I want to paint that. And she she'd be like, okay, well, all the all the lovely lady, like church ladies, all the. That's very interesting. There's a lot of black in that painting. Oh, yeah, that's how you paint a spider. So I was like, how do you paint an orc, you know? And, but Frazetta was huge, and so I was painting Star Wars characters and Frazetta kind of knockoffs. So Frazetta was huge for me, Brian Froud. They weren't comic book artists per se, but then comic people, Barry Windsor-Smith, Jeff Jones, Mike Kaluta, John Buscema, the How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. All that stuff, then fine art, you know, Alfonso Luca, Maxwell Parrish.
Sure.
I mean, all these guys, the illustrators. I was really turned on to American illustrators, and then it's kind of the more you learn about art, the more you learn about art. This is before the internet, so you go to libraries. And I would, for my birthday, my present was to go to the library, and my mom, you could check out 10 books. Everyone, so my mom would check out 20 books, and most of them were art books or books about art, so. I found that really, it just feeds you and you learn more when you learn more. Now, the internet, I mean, you know, you just go down the Google hole, you find an artist and you find all this, you can find it really obscure stuff, like old symbolists. I love the symbolists now. I mean, you go back to, especially Central Europe, Austria, Germany, and these guys, it's amazing. They're like comic book covers, but in oil paint, you know, 8 feet wide. And they're painting angels and demons and fairies and goblins and the British fairy painters, like Arthur Rackham. There's a whole conjure of these people I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And you know, you go to, there was an amazing art bookstore, pretty much every major city has one in LA, kind of St. Ingles. And they would have an illustrator section with, you know, and you'd find this, you know, like old treasures.
Yeah.
It's like Stuart Ng with books, like that's my crack den. I go there, and you know, so I got a Comic-Con without spending $800. I was like,
oh, so stewarding is your
he's my crack dealer. Yeah. Just go there.
A bunch of stuff. Diane just realized my bookshelf might be over there.
I don't go over there.
You're smart. Because you're like, honey. Yeah, I know. It'd be great to be married to you and go, look, I got this art book. You're like, how much did that cost? I'm like, oh, that's good. And then, how much did it cost?
I know. It's never how much it costs. It's always just.
For me, it's mostly a space issue.
Yeah,
that's where we are now. And that's what it's for. It's not the money. It's for the...
Where are we putting that? Ooh, she's using the microphone. She's getting efficient.
Yay!
Yeah. What are you saying?
Boom.
Oh, all right.
So I was wondering, did any of you guys work on the Wonder Woman costume that was premiered in Batman vs. Superman?
No, we totally didn't.
No.
I mean, yes, absolutely. He's done tons of movie stuff. Like,
I don't know movie stuff. I didn't work on Wonder Woman.
Like, he's worked on Jedi. He worked on Star Trek. He worked on, you know, you're IMDb. If you IMDb'd him, you'll go blind before you finish.
I can't pick a career. Yeah.
And every meeting I've ever had with anyone who wanted me to work on any movie has, the project has died very quickly after talking to me.
That's something I want to get to. But
I've worked on indie movie costume stuff, but I think, I don't know who did that, because, like, our buddy Adi Granoff, who shares our booth, worked on the, he did the first Iron Man outfit, that's the Black Panther outfit that's going to come out, so if you want to come to our booth and talk to him, he'd be the dude. I don't think he did that outfit, though, but it's like, its own
cool
process.
One.
I know it
Maybe
took him
job.
Months to do each one, and lots of approvals, and lots of technical stuff, so he would be the guy. Yeah.
Sure, and you, sir, had a question.
This was, when you guys met and were dating, instead of writing...
I didn't date them, you misunderstood.
You don't know what's going on.
No, he doesn't...
Instead of
writing... Arthur, we need to talk. Sorry, continue.
Instead of writing love letters, would you guys write, like, love comics to each other?
Oh, that's
it. No, it's even funnier than that, because he lived in Portland, and I lived in San Francisco. He used to send me boxes of stuff, but draw on the outside of the boxes. But he would draw himself, like, in embarrassing outfits. So it would be, like, him as Elektra.
She made a good daredevil.
They're somewhere.
Did you save these? That's the book you need to print.
Yeah, no, it's
like there were these boxes.
Funny drawings, and it would just be full of stuff. And, I mean, there was...
So her friends were like... How old is this guy?
And does he really look like that? Okay. I'll let them live a mystery.
Yes, ma'am.
On the same questions earlier, did you have any influence over the lady
not late Thor, but Thor, the new Thor?
I've drawn her on the books, but I mean, in that, everybody who draws her seems to draw her costume differently. But that, I mean, like, the people Marvel hires to do them.
Do they tell you what to draw?
Generally.
No, well, what you do is you turn in several sketches of what you want to draw. And the one cover that I did with her on it that is most well-known, I turned in six different sketches, and five of them were what they asked for, and one of them was her with a Pegasus. And I felt like, there's no way they would let me draw this, but I love drawing horses, and I love drawing animals. I'm just throwing this in just because it's, you know, it's like, I want to draw a horse. And they let me do that one, so that's kind of the one.
One of the few people who says, "But I wanted to draw a horse."
Yeah, everybody.
No other comic book person says that.
No.
So
I gotta draw a pony. He's not a unicorn.
When it comes to designing characters or redesigning characters, I used to do it more, but I don't. They ask me fairly regularly, and it pays really badly. So it's kind of not a great answer, not a fun answer.
Yeah.
But basically, like if I'd been the guy who redesigned Jane Foster Thor. I wouldn't be terribly happy right now. There's lots of toys and images available. And he got $500.
Yeah.
Well, so he's done.
That's the dark side of being an artist.
Yeah. Boom, bring it down.
When you're drawing, are you creating things strictly from imagination, or are you looking at faces, anatomy, and action?
I have no imagination, so I'm usually stealing from other people.
It's a bit of everything. I mean, if you're asked to draw hell, then you kind of just...
She looks at my studio.
But, you know, if you're asked to draw... what was the last thing? I remember when I first... Early on in my comics career, I had to draw an ostrich for one job and a Humvee for the other. And this is pre-internet. So you have to get a lot of reference from that. I mean, you can't make up a Humvee. And you can't make up an ostrich anymore because it's past the Victorian era. Like, people know what they look like. And so stuff like that you definitely need to reference. But if it says, you know, cathedral in the sky made of clouds, then you just kind of go with whatever.
Used to be clip files was a big thing for
illustrators
and art files. And they would will, people would will them to younger artists or say, I'm retired.
They were so invaluable.
Now it's Google. Google Images saves everyone.
Yeah, now you can find an ostrich in a Humvee.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you do the face and anatomy of the individuals, actual people, you know, you see those Alex Toth little drawings where he's got multiple little things on there?
He was a good artist.
Well, when he just did the Logan poster for the Logan production, he had to look at pictures of Hugh Jackman. I mean, there's stuff...
Not any work in that, I can say that.
Yeah. If they ask you specifically for something, then you do it. Other than that, it's a lot faster to just draw from your head. Right?
Huh?
And like Kirk, I mean, you're working on the people's faces themselves, right?
Well, not since the restraining order. I want to talk to you. We've got about 15 minutes left. About Monkey Man O'Brien, which you created.
Sure.
And yes, I love that.
No, I have to
a gorilla and a hot woman. I mean, it's, you know, and they're friends. They have adventures. What's interesting, and I only found this out, I think, last couple of years, that it's been developed how many times to be turned into a
live-action,
animated, whatever, all these different variations.
I've actually lost track. It's been six or seven times.
Okay, yeah.
It's been quite a few times. It's only been twice it's actually gone into...
Production.
Designing elements before it's fallen apart, but it's
and all animated or live action too, like a live action.
The first was going to be live action, and the rest were all animated.
Well, because I mean, after watching the new Planet of the Apes, you go, well, this is the time to do it because you just get out Andy Serkis or someone like that.
If you know somebody,
yes, you knew someone who worked in the. So how many people would buy a ticket to that movie? No, you get it free, but you have to wear them and think with the monkey man suit.
I'm there.
Or they
I'll do it.
So I think a lot of people know that artists, creators, you know, talk about the creative process. Talk about that process of, hey, we love your idea, but, you know, could O'Brien be, you know...
The first one was meetings at Disney when it was going to be both... They were working on both a live-action movie and a... TV cartoon. They wanted to develop them both at the same time. So I was saying, so they said, well, can we make Anne O'Brien instead of 16 or 17? Can we make her 13? And a boy. Like,
right, exactly.
No, you
could
can't
be the Old West.
Yes. And
can he be a panther?
What's the deal on this? What's the deal on her? This the sister whose name escapes me at the moment.
Oniko.
Oniko. Yeah. Thank you.
We have real fans here.
And I said, oh well, her name in real life is. I mean, the English translation of her name is Devil Child. Okay, that never leaves this room. We never talk about that ever again. We never want to hear that. And I was also thinking that Diane O'Brien had probably 12 sisters and one brother, all by different women. That never leaves this room. We never talk about that again.
Wow. Wow. So that was...
That was Disney.
So there, every sister would then be an adventuress of some sort.
Right, right.
And do some different, like there'd be a detective sister.
So that's the thing is, you know, how much do you want to sell your soul developing? I've worked a lot developing projects.
Well, Disney's offer was, well, how much money are you going to give me for the option for this? Their offer was, well, your name will have Disney attached to it.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. It's like you won't own anything anymore.
My joke is we will pay you to work on it. We will own the idea, but you'll get to work on it.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of people don't know. I mean, especially now with the success of these huge comic book franchises.
That sometimes the people who created it don't get that much money.
Don't get that much money. Don't even sometimes get the credit unless they actually... And then the Writers Guild doesn't recognize... You could design Monkey Man O'Brien. Yeah. If you don't write the script, you don't get created by it. That I met with Jim Henson on the TV show Dinosaurs I worked on. Jim and I sat down, I started drawing, we just had a bunch of meetings, and we had this idea, and then he sadly passed away. They hired two TV sitcom writers, and they got created by credit, and they fought, the Henson Company fought to get Jim credit, because it was his idea. And,
yeah.
No, he wasn't a writer. He wasn't a member of the Writers Guild, so he doesn't get, they own the term created by.
That's
so
crazy.
If you're a comic books creator, and your stuff gets turned into a script or movie, probably won't get it. Might be based on characters created by, but you can't get created by. So
that's insane.
It can be frustrating. Are there any questions about my shirt? Is this pretty? Oh, yes. It's Batik. Thank you.
Have you considered doing Monkey Man and O'Brien as a Patreon or Kickstarter type crowdfunded project?
The funding is not necessarily an issue. It's my own laziness and easily being distracted by shiny things. The problem. The funding is not really a problem.
Wow, really?
Hey.
Hey, can I
direct? Oh, no, I didn't mean to show. I meant the comic book. No, the other thing. No. Sure, I got it. Why not?
Comic book money is not that hard. I mean, there's a lot of people who are willing to put forth for Monkey Man O'Brien and Arthur, but it's more, he has a lot of projects that are on the line.
Well, on the line.
But you know, I mean, like if you do seem to have an avenue to develop it, then he can write like the opening sequence, like Star Wars, and then he'll get his record.
You know, at least Joyce likes you.
I know, well, because that one night in Mexico.
Well, there was Mexican Charles Bronson too. Yeah, and there actually was.
Driving backwards, that's a story.
That was crazy. Yeah, he was driving backwards up a busy freeway.
To get us to the convention on time, because there was such a, they weren't expecting all these people, so he drove the wrong way, and it wasn't even straight, it was curvy up the hill. So there's cars coming around this thing 30, 40 miles an hour with a big dumpy van going in whatever wrong lane we were in, and cars were swerving and honking, but we...
Yeah, and it was nuts, because we had
our 6-year-old in the back.
Our 6-year-old in the back, a couple other comic book artists, and the actor that plays Colossus in Deadpool, which he was about to start when he got home. And like, I was joking as we were terrified of dying, like, somewhere in Hollywood, there's a insurance guy that's woken up in a cold sweat. Because, you know, these guys that do these movies are insured up the wazoo, and they have to sign contracts to say they won't do anything dangerous, because they don't want to have to recast right before the shoot. And here we are going backwards up a Mexican freeway.
Right,
and your song cue.
Yeah, I know.
Was there a question over here? Am I imagining things? Is there a bigger role in the back?
This young man has another question.
Mr. Chatty Pants, thank God you're here.
Yay!
What is the most unusual comics project you've done?
Hoi.
Penthouse hired me to... No, it was Playboy. Playboy hired me in the early 90s to do a bunch of pitch work for Penthouse Web. They were starting to explore this thing called the Internet. And so I wound up drawing and doing these drawings for basically pornography, which... I didn't show to my mom, even though that's what she thought I already did.
She's psychic.
So, yeah, that was weird. I mean, it was okay. It was fun. I don't have any problem with that stuff, but it was not a gig I was expecting.
Well,
I did nothing exciting.
Ever. Oh, stop.
Ever. Or interesting.
He did a Fantastic Four thing.
He did a SpaghettiOs can.
Yeah, but that's not a comic book.
but it was.
And
weird.
That was unusual, but it's hard to say SpaghettiOs are exciting.
To a four-year-old.
Sorry, four-year-old, man.
Yes. I mean, the best thing ever.
The best thing about it was that they had specific characters they wanted me to draw on the canned artwork.
Superhero characters or like
X-Men.
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 It was X-Men SpaghettiOs because they're better if they taste like X-Men. So they made pasta in various, like as Wolverine and the Beast and Professor X. And it was amazing. There's artists who work in pasta. They're able to, like, oh, yeah, that looks like Wolverine. It's like three strips of pasta, and they made Wolverine.
Wow.
It was amazing.
So you're more impressed by that.
As anyone should be.
Pasta.
This is an extruded food product that looked like a person.
I don't know. How do we top that?
Well, you must have worked on some crazy stuff.
It's all, you know,
a blur.
Sanitized for your protection. It's like Gremlins. The weirdest thing for me was just a fun, weird job was puppeteering on Gremlins 1 where there's a big bar scene. And because I'd done puppeteering, because we were mainly special effects guys. We weren't puppeteers like the Muppets have puppeteers. So we kind of did both. I spent 3 days with my behind the bar with Phoebe Kate's crotch in my face. I was doing the two gremlins who were like kind of harassing her, and she was very sweet. And
so every teenage boy from the 80s.
Yeah, I was. She was like 17, and I was like 21. I mean, you know. But that was a fun, weird job. And the bar was a big set with real sawdust on the floor, and we were throwing like watered down beer to look like beer. So after 3 days, it smelled like a beer laboratory. It was nasty because movie lights are very hot. This is before LED panels, so it was probably 108 degrees, and it was baking sawdust and beer.
With your face in
with my face in, yeah, right in front of her belly button, my neck. But she was very sweet about it, and I saw her 22 years later in New York.
Still has an imprint of your nose in her belly.
Yeah, exactly. She thanked me for no. But you remember me.
No.
Which I was well,
you were
sorry,
nice.
We're just going off the rails now.
A bit.
You said
a bit.
Stories.
A bit. Yeah.
Stories. Any,
yeah.
That's another question. Thank God.
What was the evolution of your artist room, and what kind of things, actual specific things, do you have surrounding yourself?
Artist room?
Artist room? Oh, our work.
We're talking about how crowded it is. And
oh, I see. Well, I have lots of Godzilla toys.
You have lots of
all
the toys.
Lots of collections of comics, lots of superhero figures, lots of...
weird rocks you like.
Are you both stimulated by visual? Sure. Like, you need to look at that stuff? Because I find it.
I like it, yeah. I prefer it, yeah.
I have fish tanks and dogs.
She has fish
and
tanks
I like
and
the
dogs.
Living thing. I like my garden.
Make
actual living things. He likes plastic eyes staring at him.
Yeah, well...
Yes, but I guess it's pressure. It's audience pressure, right?
No, I'm used to ignoring people looking at me.
How many people here are artists or make a living in the arts?
Young lady back here. Whoa, wow.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
So,
way
yeah,
to go.
All stuff
good job,
great.
Guys.
Anyone who does that. Did someone just flash the sign 5 minutes?
Yes.
It is 5 minutes, okay. Thank you. Got
it. It's him.
Get him. We want 7 minutes. So yeah, I think what's interesting about all the arts having done, I mean, I've worked in movies and television, writing, directing, sculpting, making creatures, it's all the same flow chart.
Yeah.
Idea, reference,
yeah.
And then slowly bring
then,
it.
Then, oh shit, the deadline.
Yeah. Oh crap, that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I think
I like the oh shit, oh, it worked out.
Oh, here's a question.
No, I got the oh shit, oh well, it's gotta go now.
Yeah.
Hey, I got paid.
Done. Have you looked at something that you hated, either were not happy with it for 10 years later? You know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was, because that happens a lot.
Oh, no, I started in the 90s. It was pretty bad.
And you still think, yeah, thank God they didn't have nobody.
Oh, you know, it's nice because not all that stuff's online because it was in the 90s, right? So
bought all the copies and burned them.
Oh, I know. That's okay. I mean, except when I see them, I have to sign them. I'm like,
There's a couple of pieces. Like, there's one job I liked doing a lot, and I think it came out, for the most part, pretty good, my Fantastic Four issues.
Yes.
But the Gray Hulk in it, which I thought I'd drawn quite well, but I look at it now, it's like, why did I give him that big forehead? I mean, it's like, really, it's not just wide and prominence really weirdly high. I don't know what that's about.
And as an FX guy, you must be horrified by some of the stuff you did, like, way back.
Well, that was technology, though. You know,
yeah.
When you really think about it, foam rubber was tree sap that we mixed up in a Hobart blender.
Are you kidding?
It's rubber tree sap.
Wow.
Chemicals in it. So the fact that someone figured out, not me, how to make
it's amazing.
Like skin and all that. Now, with CG and silicone and all
gelatin
that,
much more.
Gelatin, literally the stuff you can put raspberries on and eat. We use to make all sorts of fun makeups. Yeah. Now we're just stalling. We have like 2 minutes left. Are there any other questions? Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
You have not asked any questions.
Maybe I missed it. Maybe it was earlier. Who inspired or inspires?
Oh, yeah, you missed that. Anyway.
Just everything around. You know,
stuff,
I mean,
junk.
I really, the first time I went to France, Paris, I thought, you know, I was really inspired by a lot of that. I mean, just things that happen, funny jokes, I don't know. France and jokes. Well, no, the other thing is, like, people
funny
that,
things were said, information
draw,
was exchanged.
People that draw better than you and people that draw worse than you are both inspirations.
Yeah, true. One more question. Yes, sir.
You are the last question.
After that singing.
Scared him.
Can we get a different last question? I tend to ink my own work, as does Joyce.
I ink my own work now. I didn't for a long time, and I regretted that.
It's partly greed, because I don't want to share my artwork with anyone else, because if you work with an inker, that means they tend to get some of the artwork. And I don't do enough of it, so I'd like to keep it.
I did a Hulk Dazzler job, and it went out to a guy to ink in Spain, and I didn't get it back for 2 years, and when I got it back, it was folded. So I didn't get
another reason not to work with an inker. Yeah.
Yeah, after, I mean, you know, and I don't know, because it's cheaper to ship folded from Spain. So,
I always travel folded.
You always travel folded?
Yeah, 6'1", so it's much cheaper for me. Okay, that was the last question and the last stupid answer. But for me,
no, awesome.
Thank you, everyone.